Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
You know how you always want to know about everyone else's money? On the podcast What We Spend, guests will, for 1 week, tell us everything they spend their money on.
My son slammed $6 worth of blueberries in 5 minutes.
And everything that makes them feel.
I want to own a house. I want to have a child. But this morning, I really wanted a coffee.
Because at the end of the day, money is always about more than your balance. Listen to and follow What We Spend, an Odyssey original podcast. Available now wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm watching the replay of the Astros game in studio here. I'm just looking at Jason Alexander. Like, I just, not the most intimidating guy in the world. You got kind of a soupy physique, you know, kind of a dad bod. I feel like the Astros could get a good quality start out of one of us if they gave us the proper training. They're just throwing guys out there now and they're giving them six innings all the time. I don't know when the last time the Astros ever had a start where a starter's gotten like chased. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like Lance had a bad, Lance had a mediocre start like a couple weeks ago where he gave up four runs in six innings. But if you go six innings, you're not getting chased. You may not have had a great game. Like, I can't remember the last time that they had somebody where Joe Espada had to go out there and get a guy in the third inning or something like that.
You know how NHL teams have the emergency goalies, like some guy that's actually working a full-time job as a plumber or something, but he can come in and play goalie on the spot. Yeah, the Astros should have some solid citizen Houstonian. Either you, me, or maybe a former college baseball player or something.
Any of them, that
you're allowed to call up in an emergency situation, what is the deal with that in the NHL? Like, each city, basically, they have a guy that there's some kind of rule where they can just call him up, and you're probably only allowed to do it so many times. But it's always
text
a fun
in.
Story
I'm aware of the everyman goalie situation in the NHL. I don't know the ins and outs of the rule book about it.
If Houston ever gets a hockey team, rest assured, Shauna, I'll know the basic
chapter and verse. There is, and we're going to get to Chris Sims on CJ Stroud here in a second, I promise. But we mentioned the Stanley Cup final like in passing in headlines, like it got closed out last night. And I was listening to some radio this morning coming in that was national, and it was obviously it's a much bigger story outside of Houston because we don't have a team. Is there any part of you that feels like as you're listening to, you know, Stanley Cup final talk that you're the kid pressed up against the window watching all the other kids have fun inside the candy store? Like, do you miss?
Not really. Yeah. I'm like, the kids are playing some game that I don't care about. And I'm like, I'd rather just, I'm going to scroll through my phone.
Yeah.
My brother's a big hockey fan.
Yeah.
And he texts me once a day during the playoffs with the name of some Eastern European I've never heard of.
Colorado.
Like, oh my God, can you believe Kachukli did that? I'm like, oh, no, I can't. Wow, really, I'm astounding.
Does he text you back and tell you what a crappy radio host you are that you don't know about Kuklupski or whatever?
He's astounded that we don't talk NHL.
He lives in Denver, right? He's in Colorado?
Yeah.
It's big there, man. It is big.
You guys don't talk about this at all? Oh, my God. I know my listeners. Yeah, there's like 3% of our listeners would really love it if we did. The other 97% would be tuning us out.
I love hockey. Like, I love going to games, but it is, like, for us here, it's empty calories. If you and I are spending 3.5 hours watching a hockey game on a night where the Astros are playing, it's empty calories.
Or if we're ignoring the Chris Sims audio that you teased, I apologize.
There you go. I was the one who got off on this tangent. Okay. You don't need to apologize. All right, so let's get to the Chris Sims audio that I teased. Seth keeping us on track. I like it.
That's right. That's what I do.
That's it. So Chris Sims does his rankings of, I think it's like the top 40 quarterbacks in the NFL every year. He gets a lot of attention for this. I feel like his rankings, like if there's a line of respect for power rankings of something, Chris Sims' QB rankings are above that line.
Well, it's either respect or disrespect because a lot of times he'll
attention.
Have ones that
how's
people
how's attention?
Disagree with.
How does attention sound? He gets a lot of attention for it. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's got CJ Stroud ranked 7th. This is the utmost praise. This is the highest praise I've seen CJ get this offseason. This has been a very different offseason for the the ratings on C.J. Stroud than it was coming out of his rookie year when he was the offensive rookie of the year and threw 24 touchdowns and 5 interceptions or whatever it was. This is Chris Sims, and this is not the first time he said this, but this is Chris Sims on the episode where they're going through the rankings, revealing C.J. Stroud ranked 7th. We'll tell you who the other guys were in the top 10 in just a second, but Chris Sims reiterating something he said all offseason, that a lot of the Texans' negatives – offensively were not C.J. Stroud's fault.
A lot of the film and the negative is not C.J. Stroud. I go, no, it's the Houston Texans. He can't block them. He can't get open for them. He can't call another play where it's like, wait, we can't block, so now we're sending. Remember we had this conversation during the season. Wait, we can't block anybody, so we're keeping everybody in the box, so now we only have 2 or 3 people going out and routes downfield. Oh, and that's right, Nico Collins is hurt, and Stephon Diggs is not playing. So who's getting open? Oh, hey, we got Tank Dell. Okay, yeah, but he's about to get hurt too, so then what are we going to do there? I mean, so that's where we all threw it on C.J. Stroud for the step back, and I'd go, it was anything but that.
I don't know about the last part there where I think a lot, if anything, the vast majority of people did not blame it on C.J. Stroud. I think it was pretty obvious and apparent that, and I appreciate Chris Sims throwing himself into the mix, but I would say that Chris Sims last year during the season, I remember after the Green Bay game, he had a very good breakdown of what happened where he was specifically saying, this isn't C.J. Stroud's fault. There's pass protection issues here. The operation pre-snap is a big part of it. The Texans were at a point last year where there were times where they were using full slide protection so frequently that defenses just started baiting them into getting the protection that they wanted. And a lot of it had to do also with you had a young center, whether it was Juice Scruggs or Jarrett Patterson, making a lot of the calls at the line of scrimmage. CJ didn't really have any control over pass protection, and it was just a mess. Teams were just baiting them. And it was it wasn't CJ's fault. But CJ now moving forward is going to have more command at the line of scrimmage. That's been confirmed by Nick Caley and CJ Stroud and Nick Caserio. That's a lot of responsibility, but if he does it well, then yes, everything's tied together. And I mean, that was, if we're going to criticize the way they built this team and how they operated the last couple years, I think having a young center in an offense where the center is responsible for making so many calls paired with a young quarterback, it's so much different than, say, having Chris Myers make the calls for Matt Schaub. It's really, really hard to get it right.
Yeah.
And then you factor in whatever the offensive coordinator and offensive line coach's issues were. You know, it wasn't CJ's fault. Now, it's moving forward, it will be CJ. Like, you will be able to blame CJ Stroud more if things are discombobulated when he's the one setting protections and et cetera.
If I'm going just by the behavior of the team in the offseason, all those things that Chris Sims listed, they made some move to address. And so in some ways it looks like the team agrees with Chris Sims. Chris Sims is saying, I can't block for these guys. Well, they fired the O-line coach and they brought in a bunch of new offensive linemen. I don't know if it's going to work, but they did. They didn't just sit on their hands and run it back with what they had. Chris Sims said, I can't get open for these guys. What did they do? They went and got Christian Kirk, and they drafted 2 wide receivers on day 2. And CJ getting more control at the offensive line, I think, is another thing that, the behavior of the team would seem to indicate that they agree with what Chris Sims is dishing out here.
Yeah, the other thing, too, is I know there's the stat that's always floating around there out there is how often the quarterback is to blame for a sack. I really hate that statistic just because there's no way to measure all the different variables that go into that.
Yeah.
And CJ wasn't one of the worst in the league or anything when it was the quarterback's fault. But so much, the ones where you can look at it with your eyeball, there's times where you can say like, all right, well, the quarterback shouldn't have taken that sack, should have gotten rid of it or whatever. The cumulative effect, I think, was the worst in the fourth quarter of the Kansas City game because by the fourth quarter, they didn't have answers for the blitzes and the pre-snap looks that the Chiefs were giving them. But then, because of everything that had happened in the entire season and in the first 3 quarters of that game, CJ was bailing a little early on a few of those plays. But you can't blame him given the environment that it's been. It was really, really hard to operate. If they get back to an average level of competence in that regard, CJ is going to be a much better quarterback this year.
Here's another one from Chris Sims, admitting CJ wasn't perfect, but he has no problem with CJ Stroud's decision making.
Was he perfect? No. Did he have some down moments? Sure, he did. But I think a lot of those down moments were more about like, oh no, the team's not playing well. We're not doing well on offense. I'm going to try to force something or make something happen, right? Or I'm under pressure and I'm trying to make big throws down the football field regardless of what I'm under and who's hitting me and who's open and not open. So that's what you look at. But I watch him and I go, I have no problem with his decision making. His decision making's really good.
Yeah, and I think the one area that every young quarterback needs to get better at coming out of college and going into the NFL is being really comfortable with checkdowns. And CJ's made progress in that, but when you watch Tom Brady, and CJ's been watching young Tom Brady film with Nick Cayley, one of the best things Brady would do, and people would criticize him for this, they would use it like, oh, it's evidence that he's not that great a quarterback. Well, it's just a bunch of short routes and checkdowns. No, when he threw to the running back, it was within the rhythm of the offense, and he was able to diagnose what was going on with all the primary routes quickly enough that it's not a check down. It's, nope, this is my most lethal option right here. I'm going to get it to the running back early in the down. So Woody Marks is huge with what the Texans can do in terms of being an efficient offense. The other part of it was once Stephon Diggs went down, look at CJ's stats in the games with Stephon Diggs and then without. Almost all of his stats went markedly down, significantly down, because he can make those good decisions about when to get it underneath. You know, when to throw a tight window throw to Stephon Diggs, but he didn't really have anybody that could do all those Stephon Diggs things after he was gone. So I like, they've got redundancy now at slot receiver.
Yeah.
It's not like they have Stephon Diggs and nobody else. They've got Christian Kirk, veteran player who can hopefully just be exactly where he's supposed to be. And then Jalen Knoll, as he comes along, hopefully is an option as well. And then, so Jaden Higgins, I think he's going to have the most highlight reel catches.
Yeah.
But a lot of the shorter stuff that just keeps the chains moving and CJ's ability to utilize those guys and also utilize Woody Marks, that's in my mind, that's a much bigger deal than, hey, how many touchdown throws does Jaden Higgins get?
I agree with you. I think a big thing, too, with the checkdowns and why people would be critical of Brady or dubious or whatever, you know, have negative feelings about it, it's boring. You know, like, I think that's a lot of it. And I think along those lines that I think for a young quarterback like CJ Stroud, who views himself as a ball placement specialist, who himself said last year after the Carolina, or 2 years ago after the Carolina loss, we need to stretch the field more. We need to go downfield more. And they did that next game against Tampa. He threw for 500 yards. I think for young quarterbacks, it's boring to check down sometimes. They do want to make the sizzly throw. They want to make that window throw to Nico along the sidelines or hit that deep shot. It's boring, but it's effective.
Right, and this is what happens is with the classic case. Anybody who plays Madden can appreciate this. You run four verts, right? Send everybody downfield. And in college, somebody's going to come open.
Yeah.
Eventually, especially when you're playing at Ohio State.
Yep.
It's like, yep, send four verts.
Yep.
And the tendency is to just wait. And CJ made a lot of progress from his rookie year to his second year and not waiting it out at times. But it's just being at an eighth of a second faster with, nope, I'm checking down.
Yeah.
Especially if you're running it versus deep coverages, shell coverages, where they're just going to take away the deep ball. You just got to realize, like, nope, you got to take a profit. Can't go broke taking a profit.
That's right.
Take what the defense gives you. All of those cliches are cliches for a reason. It's just the old Bull Durham speech where Kevin Costner is telling the pitcher to know his cliches. Yeah, know the cliches and understand that they're cliches for a reason.
Nuke LaLouche. Yep. Chris Sims, more from Chris Sims. So Chris Sims, if you're just getting in your car, C.J. Stroud's seventh on his quarterback rankings. It's the highest ranking I've seen for C.J. this offseason on lists like this. This is Chris Sims talking about how important it is that CJ's able to replicate his throwing motion.
His ability to replicate his throwing motion, I would say him and Joe Burrow are the best in football at that. It's just being machines, mechanically, throw after throw after throw after throw. Yeah, he is one of the most skilled throwers, passers in the group. He might not have as strong an arm as Justin Herbert or Baker Mayfield or a Lamar or a Mahomes, but it's plenty strong. okay? But it's the pinpoint accuracy and then all the versatility in the throws he has off that.
That's what, and Clint did a good job when we had him on of talking about this, that, man, with CJ, it's not like he's got crazy funky arm angles and everything where you might expect shoulder soreness. That's why it was concerning that, wait, what, he's got, and it sounds like from CJ's press conference, it sounds like his shoulder might have been sore just because he was working out in the weight room so hard.
Yeah.
Because CJ said something, there's a risk-reward involved in that.
Yep.
That I hope he learned his lesson. That, yes, you're CJ, great. Work your legs out, yeah. Get thicker, like Bulk Nick Caserio talked about, yeah, with us. You got to be super, super careful with anything upper body.
Yeah.
A Tom Brady physique is just fine.
Yep.
And hopefully he learned his lesson. I don't want him to go full meathead. If I hear him talk about what pre-workout drink he uses at any point, I'm gonna demand an intervention.
You're stepping in if there's anything about workout drinks.
Yeah.
Oh, it's great. So Chris Sims sums it up. CJ Stroud, elite on all fronts.
All in all, it's all on the up and up. And I think way too much of the negatives of the Houston Texans got put on CJ Stroud last year. He is one of the best quarterbacks in football. He's one of the best throwers in football. He's one of the best passers in football. He's one of the best decision makers in football. And he's clutch as hell. And the team believes in him. He's one of those guys. He's rare. He's rare. I love watching C.J. Stroud. I think this year will be better than any year he's had in his career to this point.
Okay.
Yeah, again, I feel like he's attacking a straw man when he's defending C.J. against apparently this horde of people that are saying he's trash.
Yeah.
Maybe in amongst fan circles, certainly. They're always going to do that.
Yeah.
By and large, the cognizetti of the NFL, they've kind of given C.J. a pass on last year already. And they're waiting to see what it looks like with better pass protection and a different offensive coordinator.
Yeah,
it really. I have yet to come across, because I seek this. You and I seek this stuff out.
We do.
I have yet to come across somebody that's really made a huge talking point of like, yep, CJ Stroud was overrated and it's obvious. And I told y'all, other than clickbait type stuff.
Okay, I'm glad you brought this up, because there is this one guy, and I feel
right.
Silly.
You're saying this one guy, right?
But it's and I'm bringing it up because it's been a thing for the last 48 hours.
Yeah.
And I feel dirty even saying his name, but he's. To your point, he's one of the few guys that's really taken a run at C.J. Stroud. His name's Chris Bukowski.
Oh, yeah. The guy that's talking about how Bryce Young was better than C.J. Stroud.
Texan fans may not want to. They may be ignoring this, but from week 8 on, Bryce Young, better quarterback than C.J. Stroud.
I don't think anybody's really ignoring it. I think it was obvious. Like, it was evident that the offensive coordinator, the offensive line coach, and 3 starting offensive linemen are no longer on this football team.
Yeah.
That's been the story of the offseason by and large. It really, other than just like that, I mean, like, and he's not, I don't think you can accuse him of clickbait there because it's factual in a lot of ways. Bryce, I would say the more story that's maybe been under-discussed is the improvement that Bryce Young made after he got benched.
I agree. I think Bryce Young deserves credit.
A lot of people were saying, oh, that might be it for him. I don't think he's ever going to play another stat for the Panthers. He came back and looked a lot better with a new head coach and offensive coordinator, and that's probably an under-discussed story.
Yeah.
But I like to moving forward, the race between Bryce Young and C.J. Stroud might be a lot closer than people thought it was after the rookie year.
Yep. There's a text message. Did you all ever talk about Pete Prisco not having C.J. ranked on his top 100 players list yesterday? Not yet, but it's like you're looking over my shoulder at the rundown, sir. We got the Chris Sims on one end and Pete Prisco at the other that we'll get to. One more.
You know what, Sean?
Yeah.
As I've said, you haven't really heard a lot of this stuff. We're in the dead time of the NFL where this is where there will be a lot of C.J. Stroud shade over the next month.
Keep your eyes open for it.
There will be because, man, people are like – people start looking at their view counts and everything. They're like, I gotta rattle the cages a little bit here.
I'm
going to piss off some fan bases.
I got to go kick a bee's nest real quick here. Yeah. Last one from Chris Sims, kind of echoing what we're saying a little bit earlier. The Texans offseason, the way they've operated as a team and as a front office – kind of shows that they don't see C.J. Stroud as the problem.
There's a reason they fired their offensive coordinator after going to the playoffs 2 years in a row. There's a reason they've totally said, the hell with our offensive line after going to the playoffs 2 years in a row. They are telling you without telling you, the problems were the team, were not C.J. Stroud. It was our pass protection scheme and our offensive line. And that's what they had to fix. And C.J. Stroud, the Texans, I will not be shocked if they're in the Super Bowl this year.
How about that, right at the end there? A little dropped a little SB on us right
hey
there.
Hey now.
Hey, yeah. I like that. That feels good.
The other thing that happens now is it'll be fun and interesting. This time of year is fun because a lot of people do more in-depth breakdowns and everything. Mm-hmm. The Jaden Daniels, I'd like to think about, okay, you worry about sophomore slump with quarterbacks. Cliff Kingsbury specifically has a history of taking the league by storm and then the league catching up to him. That's the really interesting dynamic, I think, is the Cliff Kingsbury and Jaden Daniels duo and exactly how they move on from a lot of the stuff they did last year where it's, man, the ball's coming out quick, shorter routes, all that, that to set up the deeper ball. That, okay, how do they make the adjustments to the adjustments?
Yeah.
And Kingsbury's been in the NFL a long time now. I think as an offensive coordinator, you're going to see the absolute best version of Cliff because that's been his problem as a head coach. This is why I was so curious that he got hired.
Yeah,
he looks at defense as a nuisance almost.
Yeah.
And yet as a head coach, there's all these other personnel issues and defensive issues that you got to consider and address that he doesn't have to worry about any of that right now. He can just be the mad scientist in the lab.
Yeah, I think they're going to be good again. You know, and
if I had to bet, I think Jaden Daniels is going to have. Because the big difference between Jaden Daniels' rookie year and C.J. Stroud's rookie year is that Washington had a genuinely good offense.
That's right.
Whereas, the Texans' offense was promising, but they weren't a genuinely good offense yet.
Yep, absolutely. Payne and Pendergast with you on a... By the way, the top 10, Chris Sims' top 10 goes like this. Counting up, Jalen Hurts 10, Baker Mayfield 9. So he's got Baker ahead of the Super Bowl winning, Super Bowl MVP. Justin Herbert 8. Which is, I think, even more egregious than Baker Mayfield. C.J. Stroud, 7. Matthew Stafford, 6. Jaden Daniels is 5 on his list. And then you got the big 4. Pretty much any QB ranking that you're doing this offseason, 1 through 4 is going to be some permutation of, and I'll count it down, Mahomes at 4, Burrow at 3, Allen 2, and Chris Sims has Lamar Jackson as the best quarterback in football right now. You are hard-pressed to find any sort of QB power ranking that has somebody invading the top 4. It's Jackson, Allen, Burrow, and Mahomes. And I think if you're a Texan fan, the thing that jumps out at you there is those are all in the AFC.
Yeah,
you are playing in the senior circuit right now.
The Mahomes one is so interesting because you talk about people. It's almost built in now that people give Mahomes an excuse for his regular season numbers over the last couple of years.
Yeah,
because they've had offensive line issues.
Yes,
but the real extreme one is when Pat Mahomes had the second worst game of his career in the Super Bowl, he faced a pass rush pressure rate that was what C.J. Stroud's average pass rush pressure rate was last year. Or actually lower than C.J.'s average. Like in any given game, C.J. was getting pressured as much as Pat Mahomes was in the Super Bowl.
That's right.
And that's where, but it's almost like Pat Mahomes has such a pass now to where people aren't even really looking at the stats anymore. They're just saying, they win games.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
What We Spend is a new podcast that explores something we almost never talk about. Every week, you'll hear a different guest share everything they spend their money on. What We Spend is available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's a great segue into Pete Prisco, his list. He did his top 100 NFL players as we roll on here on a Wednesday on Payne and Pendergast. Just shifting gears from extreme praise for C.J. Stroud to completely ignoring C.J. Stroud, it seems like, by Pete Prisco. Did his top 100 players. I would say he's got one of the more attention-getting top 100 lists every year. People know Pete Prisco of CBSSports.com. I'll start it off by saying there were 4 Texans that made the list that made Pete Prisco's top 100. Derek Stingley Jr. is 23rd on the list. He's the top Texan. Danielle Hunter is 47. Will Anderson Jr. is 56. Nico Collins is 67 on the list. I don't have an issue with any of those. Those all feel about right. It feels like the proper order of those guys as far as where they rank within the Texans. The thing that has Texan fans worked up is we read a text earlier, and there's others that are upset about this. There are 1, 2, 3. There are 11 quarterbacks that cracked the top 100 for Pete Prisco, and none of them are C.J. Stroud. And some of them are quarterbacks where I'm like, no way. Like Dak Prescott ahead of C.J. Stroud right now. That's false. I think Jordan Love of Green Bay, I think, is a real debatable one. He didn't have a real good second half of the season last year. Justin Herbert being the 6th-rated quarterback on this top 100, Seth, and 46th overall, I don't get the Justin Herbert love. Like
in an offense where they did a great job of managing Justin Herbert.
Around him almost. Yeah.
Then the head-to-head just was the vastly inferior quarterback to C.J. Stroud in the playoffs.
Vastly inferior. It wasn't like they were in a shootout and C.J. won on a last-second field goal. C.J. had a great game, and Justin Herbert threw more interceptions than he threw during the regular season.
The first thing I wanted to look at when I saw the list, because I saw people were upset about it, was how many quarterbacks are on the list. So it's really then treat it like a power ranking of quarterbacks, because realistically you should put 20 quarterbacks in the top 100 if it's just about effect on the game.
So
12th or 13th, based on the fact that CJ's got a small sample size and the results are what the results, I don't really get overly offended by stuff like this at this point in the year. There are so many factors that led to CJ having the statistical year that he did. Yeah. And yet the performance was the performance. He's only got 2 years. One was very promising, and then last year was last year. If you want to rank him the 13th or 14th best quarterback, then fine. It doesn't really offend me.
No, you're right. I guess it's the omission from a list that –
Yeah.
The optics of being left off a list are different than you're framing it in a way that's very logical. It's like his name's not even on here. And there are a couple like Dak and Justin Herbert on there ahead of him bother me. that just bothers me.
You know who wasn't a top 100 player his first several years in the league? Tom Brady.
Yeah.
So he wasn't. Yeah. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. Did Sauce get ranked? We have a text here. Did Sauce get ranked ahead of that? That'll be upset about if Sauce got ranked ahead of Stingley. No, he didn't. He's right behind him at 24. So we have a texter saying, why do they keep ranking Sauce higher than Stingley? I think that has by and large stopped. And I'm not just talking about Prisco having him one spot behind him here. Stingley was a first-team All-Pro. Sauce Gardner wasn't. End of subject. Ultimate ranking.
The biggest thing, too, that I think that it offends Texans fans is we've become so... just the swarm mentality has become ingrained in us.
Yeah.
And Sauce Gardner is so non-swarm, which is especially offensive because he's such a big guy.
Yeah.
He's a grabby guy that gets away with a lot of contact that is, if he's playing your team, it annoys the hell out of you.
Yeah.
I think that argument for now is very much in Derek Stingley's favor.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as Derek Stingley stays healthy, I think the respect amongst cornerbacks, especially, if you took an anonymous poll of NFL starting cornerbacks, the respect they have for Derek Stingley's actual skill in the way he goes about it, because he wins with his feet, not his grabby hands and his length like Sauce Gardner does. I bet if you pulled 64 starting cornerbacks, let's say 62 if you take Sauce and him out of it.
Yeah.
Completely anonymously, I think 90% of them would say Stingley's a better player.
I think they'd rather have Stingley's game than have Sauce's game, for sure.
Yeah, they would rather be like, if I have to be this guy, I'd rather be Derek Stingley.
I'd rather be Stingley with those ball skills, man. Yeah. Hell yeah. Absolutely. No Laramie Tunsil, by the way, on Pete Prisco's top 100. So there is that. All right, moving along here on a quick text message. Where was all this Chris Sims knowledge when he was at the University of Texas? That's a Longhorn texting right there.
I'm worried about whatever sinus issue he has. It seems like he's gotten more and more nasal over the last
Chris
couple
Sims,
years.
I hadn't noticed. Yeah.
He sounds congested all the time.
He doesn't sound anything like his old man. That's what I've been looking for. Like, just their voices. Phil Sims has a very twangy kind of element to him. I think he went to school in Kentucky. I know that.
Yeah.
Sims, and of course, Sims was brought up in New Jersey, not in the deep South.
Sims has done a good enough job in media that I don't think he's looked at as a guy that, like, oh, he's only got that because his dad is Phil Sims or whatever.
No.
He really works at it. He does a lot of in-depth film breakdowns. He does a daily show with Pete Prisco and all that. So definitely got his foot. His name helped him get the foot in the door probably with a few early ones. But he was also, I mean, he was an NFL quarterback. He was, he was obviously quarterback at a big time school.
He's on the Notre Dame coverage on NBC, and I like him. And that's, for me, is the ultimate compliment because they bring in so many outsiders to cut on, and it's they are Notre Dame branded broadcasts. It's not like the SEC on CBS. And he does a good job. I think I'm with you on that. Hey, Mike McDaniel has been kind of somebody we've been kind of focused in on the last few days just because he's on a bit of a hot seat down in Miami. This got a lot of attention in the last couple days. Apparently Bradley Chubb, who went healthy, is one of Miami's best players, one of their best defensive players, but he missed time with an ACL last year. Bradley Chubb had a quote that he said this week via a team transcript. I'm looking at this on NFL.com. He was asked about, he didn't play it down for them last year because he was coming back from an ACL, but he was close enough to the team throughout the year to see any talk of a difference in the ethos of the team being a farce. I'm reading that directly from an article on NFL.com from Grant Gordon. And the quote from Chubb was, "I'm going to say last year we were lying, honestly. Point blank, period. We felt it. We put our toe in the water, but we didn't dive all the way in. We didn't get all the way there with each other. We weren't making the effort to go the extra mile. And I would say this year, we're doing that," end quote.
Mm.
This was Mike McDaniel when it was brought up to him in a press conference earlier this week. This quote was brought up to him within the last couple days about Bradley Chubb saying that the team, who all report to Mike McDaniel, was lying to themselves about their culture change.
Bradley Chubb said that he thought the team was lying when they said that they were committed to culture change last year. He said they stuck a toe in the water, but they didn't dive in. That's just one man's opinion. We haven't asked any other players, so it's not, necessarily the truth. But I'm wondering what you think about that and if you ever sensed that last year.
It would have been awesome if he would have told me, on the front end when they're lying. Beyond that, 2024, unless I'm using it directly for an analogy, I'm much more concerned with 2025. So I think you do a lot more for the organization if you spend your time thinking forward in terms of how, not this, that, or the other, or whose fault it was. No, we want it like this, and let's do it like this, and this is who we are. And, I don't even – what year did you speak of?
25.
What? I guess I'll read about that in the history books.
Okay.
McDaniel, I'm surprised he wasn't aware of the quote. I figured he must have been aware of the quote ahead of time because usually as a coach, this is a rule, and players as well. Don't ever respond to a scintillating quote when presented to you through the telephone game of a reporter telling you, because it's always presented in the way. If I were Mike McDaniel and I hadn't heard the quote, the way the reporter presented it was almost like that either McDaniel or the McDaniels or the other guys were like somebody from the coaching staff was lying about it. Like it was a bad PR report or something. Instead of the way Chubb was saying it was kind of like, now we're lying to ourselves.
Yeah.
It's kind of like when you tell yourself, I work really, really hard. But then all of a sudden you find out that, You've got to you're not going to make a mortgage payment.
So you,
then you start working really hard.
Yeah, for
so
sure.
I was lying to myself when I thought I was working hard before.
No, I totally get that. Do you think that was the first time he had been presented with that? You don't think he had heard that Bradley Chubb had said that at some point?
Well, he asked at the end. I would have assumed that he had heard about it because A, he was commenting on it, and B, it didn't sound like a surprise to him.
Yeah.
But he asked at the end, what year were we talking about?
Yeah.
Unless that was his little weird Mike McDaniel joke of like, see, I've forgotten it already.
That's what I thought that was. That's how I interpreted that at the end. But I may not be
right. He tries too hard.
He does.
He's trying to be clever every single second.
Yeah.
And he's trying to come up with some clever way to, or some clever retort where he just say, hey, look, we can always do better. You know what? You can always do better and try harder. And last year we committed to it, but we didn't get there. And this year we want to be that much better at being tougher or whatever else the culture changes.
Yeah, man.
Be.
Like this is where like some of these NFL owners like that. Stephen Ross, the owner of the Miami Dolphins, was impressed by that guy in an interview. Like he is Mike McDaniel to me is very unimpressive. Like he, I thought his answer. If I read his answer in a transcript, assuming somebody could remove every single and stammer and this and that, like if you just took the words that mattered in that, it's a really good answer. Like it's, we need to look forward. We're not looking backwards. I think that's a very good message from a head coach. His delivery is just so piss poor. If I hear that there's a team that there was real trouble establishing a culture with this team because there wasn't total buy-in and there wasn't this connective tissue with everybody, and then they played that answer or any answer from Mike McDaniel, I would say, yeah, this guy sounds like a goof.
This is what happens when you go by the philosophy that, well, you got to hire an offensive-minded head coach because that way he can work with your quarterback, and then you two can rise to glory for together. That it's fine because it's a nice dream. It's a nice dream. That's the ideal. Have an Andy Reid type. That's perfect. But first and foremost, you're hiring a head coach.
Yeah.
And then if you have to break a tie, if you decide, okay, this guy is definitely a head coach and this guy is definitely a head coach, one of them is offensive-minded, all right, I'll go with the offensive-minded guy.
Sure.
But when you're so desperate to get that guy who's both an offensive mind and a head coach, you end up whiffing time and time again on guys who are little nerds like Mike McDaniel and not actually head coaches.
Right.
So what have you done? You've sabotaged yourself even further by having to come in with a new head coach and then probably reaching for another offensive-minded head coach. I 100% think that, yes, the ideal would be to have a guy who's a great head coach but also an offensive mind. But you see so many teams just turning down opportunities to hire genuinely good head coaches because they want an offensive-minded guy.
Yep.
So yeah, it's so they'll try again probably next year.
Yeah, we'll see.
I'd imagine.
Yeah.
I mean, look, I can't take any more of this talk about is Mike McDaniel going to be tougher this year? Who the hell gets tough all of a sudden?
Right.
Who the hell? All of a sudden, if 3 years into it, is all of a sudden a tough head coach, and the players respect him because now he's tough. I get it.
Well, now he's cursing. Right. Now he's cursing in various answers. Like this will make me tougher. I'll drop a few F-bombs in a press conference. Okay,
yeah. It doesn't mean you can't be positive. Like D'Amico's positive as they come, but he's very, very tough.
Absolutely.
I think like people that get concerned about. Like whether he's tough enough on his guys are not listening to the various players who have talked about how frustrating it is to play for D'Amico because he's so demanding.
Yep.
Like Aziz Elshire, noted tough guy.
Yes.
Talks about how infuriating it can be to play for D'Amico Ryans because he's so demanding.
Absolutely. All right. Top of the hour, we've got an important Astros question, especially in light of what we're going to do on the show here tomorrow that we'll get to. The NBA's got a problem. I've been feeling it the last 24 to 48 hours, big time. A big problem I think the NBA has, and we'll tell you what that is coming up next.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
You know how you always want to know about everyone else's money? On the podcast What We Spend, guests will, for 1 week, tell us everything they spend their money on.
My son slammed $6 worth of blueberries in 5 minutes.
And everything that makes them feel.
I want to own a house. I want to have a child. But this morning, I really wanted a coffee.
Because at the end of the day, money is always about more than your balance. Listen to and follow What We Spend, an Odyssey original podcast. Available now wherever you get your podcasts.
The NBA, I think the NBA's got an issue, and we touched on it before, but we feel it pretty acutely here now just because the Rockets are a big part of this. It's the Kevin Durant sweepstakes. The Kevin Durant sweepstakes are getting way more attention than the actual NBA finals that are going on right now. I was thinking about this morning, Seth. This would be, it's an awkward analogy because Kevin Durant is still elite at what he does. But this would be like Aaron Rodgers, like us knowing that Aaron Rodgers wants out of the Jets during Super Bowl week, and there's way more people talking about Aaron Rodgers and where he's going to end up next season than the actual Super Bowl itself between the Chiefs and the Eagles.
Right. You know? Yeah, it was I mean, the only thing that's come close to it is I can't remember which player it was. Some player who had announced his retirement the day of the Super Bowl or something. And people lambasted the player. Yeah. They're like, what are you trying to do? Take attention away from the Super Bowl. Stop this nonsense.
The one I remember, this is in baseball. The one I remember was in 2007 when Alex Rodriguez announced that
he was going to stay with
the Yankees, or he was going to do an extension with the Yankees in the middle of a World Series that had the Red Sox in it.
Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking of.
Yeah. So, but this is like the Kevin Durant thing. When they NBA insiders come and show up on different radio shows or TV shows or whatever, Durant's the first topic. Like, here's Brian Windhorst yesterday saying that maybe Kevin Durant doesn't get traded from Phoenix.
Where do you think Durant ends up, Brian?
It's a real stare down. You know, Desmond Bane got traded for 4 first-round picks, and I see people saying, oh, my God, if Desmond Bane gets traded for 4 first-round picks, Kevin Durant's got to be get 6 first-round picks. No, you're not going to get that great of a package because the team paying for it isn't sure what Durant's going to do necessarily. And the teams that Durant wants to go to, Houston and San Antonio, for example, they're leery of paying a huge amount for a 37-year-old. Their whole teams are in their early to mid-20s.
Right.
You know? So you don't have alignment in making everybody getting on the same page. You know, what Durant wants, what the Suns need, what the teams want to pay
right.
with the contract. I would not rule out the Suns not being able to get a trade they like and having to make a decision. Like, do we not trade him at all?
Okay, so this is going to go on now. I mean, this is going to go on till at least the draft a little later on this month, I would think. Some of this, admittedly, is probably a function of who's in the finals. Been a good finals, like very watchable basketball, but it's Oklahoma City and Indiana, and America by and large is not tangled by those two teams. So it's an extreme situation here where you've got one of the greatest players of all time clearly on a trade block, and you've got two very small markets in the NBA finals. And yet, but still, I think it's an issue the NBA's had for a while now, Seth, where there is way more interest in their offseason than there is with the regular season and sometimes the postseason.
Yeah, and they'd be able to talk about how it's more of a social media league than a television product, or it's more social media friendly than it is television friendly, and the plots and storylines are more engrossing than at times the sport itself. I think that there's two groups of NBA fans. Tell me if this rings true or not.
Okay.
I feel like, especially with younger people, there are a lot of people who are fans of individual players, and they're going to follow that player from place to place.
Yes.
But then amongst the team fans who are fans of a team, it's become a lot more like baseball, where you're really dialed in on your team and you're not as much of a fan of the league at large. And so there's two competing factions there of one group of fans that just cares about the stars and they're going to follow Kevin Durant wherever he goes or whomever else. And then you've got the team fans who aren't as checked in on the rest of the league as, say, NFL fans are checked in on the rest of the league.
I think that's accurate. I think it's a really good analysis. And I don't know that I have an answer as to whether – I mean, I came into this segment saying the NBA's got a big problem. They may not see it as a problem. I don't know. Like, maybe they just want –
attention for whatever, you know, like attention for attention's sake. If it's Kevin Durant and the Knicks coaching search that's bringing people into the store talking about the NBA and generating TV interest in the NBA, I know the ratings are what the ratings are, then maybe that's it. I just feel like when you have a sport, the most important thing should be who the champion is. The most important thing should be the thing that should interest fans the most should be the two teams battling it out for the trophy at the end of the year. And I feel like there's way more interest in the four teams battling it out for a 37-year-old,
yeah,
you know, 37-year-old shooting wing player.
Whether the league cares about it or not, I think it's a reflection of just how important individual basketball players are.
It sure
and
is.
Obviously, we've seen super teams forever now that the expectation of a fan base is no longer, despite the fact that Golden State did it with largely homegrown players. Mm-hmm. If you're not Golden State, you just as a fan feel like your best chance is if you bring guys from without, and if you don't build it the homegrown way, the way I think Raphael Stone would like to do it. And that's where your focus is going to be. It's less on, all right, sticking it out with these guys that we have. And no, we need to do what all of these other championship teams have done, which is figure out, cobble together some way to get this guy on my team.
Yeah.
I can't fault them for that.
No.
With the Rockets, even when as good as they were year to year with James Harden, the core of players changed so much.
Yeah.
Because Daryl Morey was trading so often, even with your role players, that it was really hard to form an emotional attachment to any of those guys.
Yep.
And even if you're looking at who the second best guy on the team, it was going to be a rotating cast of whether it's Dwight Howard or Chris Paul, and then they tried it with Russell Westbrook. That part of it makes it a lot harder to not start looking at the transactions more so than the actual team building.
Yeah. And again, maybe I'm feeling it more acutely here because the Rockets are actually involved in the KD stuff. Maybe I'm getting stuff curated to me on social media because I'm in Houston and the Rockets are always mentioned in these tweets about Kevin Durant. But I don't think it's that. I think there's genuinely more interest in where Kevin Durant ends up than who wins the NBA Finals this offseason.
No, I think, ESPN, for all the things you can criticize it for, is they know what they're doing when it comes to topic selection.
Play the hits, yeah.
And if you're sick of ESPN talking about something, it's because they've done the research and they know that that's what people are actually watching.
Yeah.
And they're talking a whole lot about Kevin Durant.
They are, man.
They probably, if you sat down, Sean, this afternoon, this is your project. Okay. You're going to go down and you're going to watch all the debate shows. And you're going to give me what percentage of the time were they talking about NBA Finals versus what percentage of the
now,
time
that
they
is a good project, actually. I am interested in that. Okay. Well,
somebody's out there done it already. One of the bloggers this type of stuff.
Maybe AI is that good. Yeah. You know, maybe they've gotten that good. They can tell me that. I doubt it, but I'm referring to them like a person.
AI. Hey, how's your AI course going, by the way?
Oh, good. I'm learning some stuff. Yeah. I've gotten a little bit behind. I'm supposed to be doing it once a day, and I've gotten behind by a few days. But it's just like the basics in AI. So I'm going to start using old ChatGPT for a few things. It's going to make show prep a lot easier, you know? Just don't have to look things up. You know, you just ask it and you get it. It's nice.
Ask it. Well, the biggest thing is, learning, having your AI learn what your preferences are seems to be a big thing, right?
Yeah.
Kind of training your AI to know what you're looking for
assistant.
And all that.
Yeah.
It's like for all of it, because I get frustrated with the AI when I just do it here and there, and there's just so many factual errors it'll make. I could probably iron that out if I actually devoted some time to it.
Yeah. I'm kind of comboing right now, learning AI and learning some video editing and audio stuff on YouTube. So I've got a full plate of things. I'm trying to modernize a little bit here, you know.
I'm going to take a class on T.I., the rapper.
What is
that? Yeah, I'm going to talk to Bun B about that. Educate me. I should do a podcast with Bun B where he fills in the gaps in my knowledge and rap history.
That'd actually be good. Just take him to lunch for a couple hours and just get some of the basics down, you know.
Nah, we got to monetize it.
That's fair. What am I thinking? All right, Payne and Pendergast with you as we head into the 8 o'clock hour. I'm stealing this from Will Kunkel, formerly of Fox 26, asked the question, and this is a big one, Seth, because about 24 hours from now, this will be the question. Has Jake Myers turned the corner and gone up a level in his career? Because we are 24 hours away from a circle of trust, and we will do that. We'll answer that question coming up next.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
You know how you always want to know about everyone else's money? Well, then listen to What We Spend, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.